this exercise of this book, Together We Rise, was actually in some ways like really, it was tied into my interfaith and my broad work, which was like, what do I really believe? And so how does that intersect with the way I understand other people?
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Paul Rauschenbusch. He's an American Baptist minister who serves as CEO and president of the Interfaith Alliance. Paul's been involved in a number of interfaith efforts, but now he's the author of a children's book, Together We Rise, An Easter Story for Us All. And that's what we'll primarily be talking about in this episode. Now, Paul's actually been on the program before when we primarily talked about his family's heritage, Christian nationalism, efforts of advocating for religious liberty for all. You can find that conversation back in episode 74 at dogma.wordandway.org. So I was excited to have Paul back, and this is a very different conversation than that one as we talk about his children's book, where it came from, and the process of bringing it together. So I think you'll find this to be an interesting conversation as we head into Holy Week. Before we jump into the interview, I first want to remind you that if you haven't done so already, you really should subscribe to Word and Way's award-winning email newsletter, A Public Witness, where we deal with issues at the intersection of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more, start reading, and subscribe today at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And now here's my conversation with Paul Rauschenbusch on Together We Rise. Well, Paul, first of all, welcome back to the program.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you here. And we're going to have a different kind of conversation. We're going to be talking this time about a children's book that you have written. And our listeners are just hearing us, but I've got it right here. Together We Rise, An Easter Story for Us All. I have to admit, I was surprised when I saw that you wrote a children's book.
I'm so excited to talk to you about it. And this was a real labor of love, I have to say. It was something I just felt like I had to do. I'm delighted that people are responding to it in such a positive way. I'm getting such kind, positive feedback. The story comes from my heart and like my spirit, and so it's lovely to see how it's being received in the world.
Yeah, well, you have a little note at the beginning of the story of where this came from, and so I think that's important to kind of set up of why you decided that you wanted to or that you had to even write this story.
Yeah, so this was a few years ago. My kids were young, and I wanted to, you know, that we read children's stories all the time, but I just felt that a lot of the children's stories that I read that were Christian, it didn't land with me. It didn't like reflect how I actually felt about Easter, about the crucifixion, the resurrection, and all of Jesus's life that kind of led to it. And I realized that I think this happens a lot in our churches, is that we see this with music as well, that sometimes we're like, we have this, many of us have a theology that, you know, has kind of been emerged over like the last decades, even centuries, that there really is one thing. And then a lot of our hymns, we still kind of do a lot of like, you know, for those of us, you know, for some, it's really important, like atonement theology and things like that. But for others of us, we actually have a different way of understanding the meaning of Jesus's death and his resurrection. And so, and I feel children's books are the same way, that there's like a little bit of a leaning into how do we make this like packed? How do we make it like really, really kind of formulaic almost in what happens? And in reading children's books, it's actually pretty, you know, do you have children?
Yes, I have a son. And so this resonates with me, the struggle of finding a children's book that fits.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting. Children's books are often very dark. They actually have lots of shadows. There's lots of loss often, I mean, that is like, you know, underneath a lot of like the revelation that happens in kind of regular children's book, the ones we look to a lot, and or scariness or things like that. And certainly the story of Jesus and this kind of amazing friendships that he had and all this love when we get into Holy Week, it gets rough, and you know, culminating with the crucifixion. And so, you know, I didn't know how to talk to them about it, and I didn't have a book that, you know, so I ended up just writing the story. And it was one of the most interesting, you know, I've been a preacher for a long time. I went to seminary in the 90s. I've been ordained now for over 25 years. And so I kind of just squunched all of that up into like, a thousand words, a little under 1,000 words. And like, what do I really mean when I talk about, you know, Jesus, and who Jesus was, and what he did during his life, and then what happened on Holy Week? And I kind of walk us through Holy Week. And it was, you know, I put it on Facebook several years ago, and people really resonated with it. You know, they just loved it. And even more importantly, I read it to my son, who was like, you know, at first he just like said, oh, okay, that's good. And then he went off, but he brought it up again at dinner. And he said, Jesus wasn't about power. He was about love. And I was like, oh my God, we're actually talking about Jesus and God. And he's developing his thoughts around it. And so that was the spark.
Yeah, I especially love that part in your little note about, you know, reading it. And then he's like, okay, good. And goes back to playing his video game. And you kind of like, yeah, I felt that. But then that moment of like, oh, wait a minute. There was a seed planted and it came back. Like, you know, that's when you knew something had hit.
Right. I mean, it's just so exciting when, you know, when you're trying to, you know, I honestly, like, I'm not like, you're going to believe exactly what I believe and then, you know, or you're going to hell and I'm going to threaten you. And, you know, I'm not going to be that person. And I wasn't raised that way either. But I, you know, I have always felt like it was important for my kids and other people in my life to understand why I say I'm a follower of Jesus and I try to live my life that way. And so it just felt important that I could, you know, share this with him. And also, like, you know, we're going to Easter services, like they're hearing a lot of these things. They're not going to Good Friday services yet, but the story is really important. And so I just wanted an opportunity for my kids and to understand it. And then the very cool thing is that all these people were interested. And so then I got a woman who was from China who actually had never really heard the Christian story. And so it wasn't someone who came in with the idea of what things should look like. You know, it was actually really interesting to get an illustrator who was hearing the words and was like really open to ingenuity or imagination of what was happening. And so it was like, it was a very collaborative, exciting, exciting experience.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the illustrations, and I mean, you know, people listening can't see it, although they could probably catch a little bit online if they go look up the book before they order it. But it's bright, it's colorful. I was thinking about that one moment you were talking about how dark children's books can be sometimes, and this is bright colors on every page, and there's also this interesting style where at times it seems, you know, very realistic, and at other times it's almost like there's a lot of colors like swirling on the page like a kid drawing with crayons. Why don't you talk more about the visual side? I don't know how much of that had you kind of dreamed up, and how much of it was like, oh wow, this is fantastic. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of collaboration on it, but like for instance, like I wanted to talk about creation, and so like you know, and I gave her like these amazing images that like of the Big Bang, you know, and which are so vivid and so bright, and like, and then one of the themes of the entire book is that, you know, God created humans and they were part of God's heart. And so, and that Jesus was God's heart embodied in the world. And so this idea of like love as like something that was offered to us, each of us, by God. And then there's this moment when like we turn against one another and we turn against God. And so it's kind of the fall in a way. And that's where like the jagged lines and almost like this kind of like very, you know, chaotic thing, which has some images in it, like attacking one another and like, you know, and so it, but I think that's actually like follows a trajectory of the story of, you know, of that we tell about, you know, creation and about people and about and a little bit of like what it means to turn on one another and forget one that we each contain part of God's heart. And so like, and then Jesus comes in and actually, you know, it was really important for me to have, make sure that Jesus was a dark-skinned individual. And yet we also have like a completely multiracial cast. So it's like really, well, I think it is important to say Jesus was a dark-skinned person, both in the realistically, I mean, actually factually, but then also in the kind of the sense, you know, I went to Union Seminary. I studied under the Black Liberation theologian. So that is really important to me, but also that has meaning for the entire human condition. And so we were all like, it was also important that everybody was like, you know, people can see themselves in this book and that they're everybody, all races, all, you know, and I really try to say all races, all genders, everybody, all sizes, they're all like part of God's heart and they're all part of this story, which is, you know, Jesus's story. And so it actually is, it was really fun imagining like what the look of it would be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do a lot of writing and public speaking and so forth, but you don't do a lot of the visual creation side. So I'm sure this was stretching you in some ways. Although you had someone else to work with who actually did the drawing. So
yeah. Oh, I'm so like, it's very funny. Our kids, like the kids, the teachers of my kid are like, you know, really good on like, you know, kind of communication skills and math and everything. Really like needs a lot of work on how to write, you know, draw people. And that's because I never draw people. I'm terrible at drawing people. And and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, a whole thing we forgot to do. Another thing that we did wrong with our parenting. But you know, but I have no skill in that area and don't pretend to. And so it was lovely to work with someone who was really like, could, you know, would come in and we would think about it together. And then she would imagine it. And then, and even like some of the things, it was really interesting, like even Jesus on the cross, like she created this image of Jesus on the cross. And it was all very like a wonderful moment, like, you know, and like, you know, the birds were singing and, you know, I mean, it was like, and I was like, no, that's not it. I mean, he was in pain. It was agony. You know, I mean, it's not a wonderful moment. It's a substantial moment. It's an important moment around like, you know, God being with us and God, you know, and compassion and all of it. But you know, a lot of the imagery that she, as someone who didn't know, she saw all these images of like this beatific Jesus who's like smiling on the cross. And that, and again, this is I wanted to represent like some, what I felt, but I've also felt a lot of people who grew up in the more liberal or progressive Christian tradition actually feel, and yet haven't seen represented in a children's book.
So you already mentioned this, and it was something I was going to ask you about because it was a surprise to me, right? That it's an Easter story for all of us, and then I flipped to the first page, and we're in Genesis 1 with the creation. I was like, this book doesn't seem quite thick enough. I mean, you get creation in the fall, and then we jump ahead. But so why did you start there? What was it about grounding the Easter story in creation?
Well, I think it's part of the creation story for me is that we were all created good. And we were all created beautiful. And that means all of us. And actually, that's like a radical thing to say right now, you know, especially as we have so many people who are kind of being targeted just for who they are, whether that's because of that their gender or their, you know, who they love or their color of their skin or anything. Like, I just think it was really important for the Easter story to make sense. It's, you know, you have to connect it with the creation story. Because it's the reestablishment of, you know, the idea. It's actually like, you know, there's some theology there, you know, or Christology if you want. But, you know, that there's something beautiful about the world that can get destroyed by hate and power and sin. And yet there's something, you know, that God, you know, as sending forth a child and who Jesus, and then who goes through all of it, creates a friendship, and the other theme of this is like the upside downness of the beloved community. Who counts? Like, who's like? I mean, Jesus is really clear. Blessed are, and then mentions all the people who lots of, you know, society thinks are not the ones who count. And so it's kind of like, what does it mean to restore the, you know, the proper order of things, which is that everybody should be loved and everybody has value and everybody has worth because they're part of not, you know, for me as a Christian, because they're part of God's heart and they represent like that life in this world. And so anyway, you know, I know it was a wind up, but for the Jesus story to matter, you have to tell the story, you know, of creation, and then we kind of zip to the birth, and then we zip to him, a Sermon on the Mount. Spend some time in that talking about what mattered to Jesus, and then some of the story about why that was threatening to power, and really like leaning into the idea of beloved community here on earth. And what that, you know, the scariness for the powerful forces. So it was just funny, like when I started writing it, like I just was like, okay, I got to set this up before we get to Holy Week, for Easter, for Easter to matter, Jesus needs to matter. And so you need to get it there. But, you know, it is a lot. I get it. But it doesn't, I don't think it feels like that in the book. I think it kind of feels like a story that makes sense when you're reading it.
Oh, it really does. Yeah, like I said, I was surprised on the first page, but it flows really well. But also, I mean, so you mentioned at the very beginning of our conversation about, you know, wanting a story that was not just the like bloody atonement theory perspective, and that takes some backing up and thinking. All right, so what was Jesus about? What was Jesus actually teaching? You know, what's actually happening? We can't just jump straight to the cross if it's about something else.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's the value of Jesus's life, the value of Jesus's teachings, which is something that for those of us, you know, who really take the Sermon on the Mount seriously and take like the final commandment to love one another seriously. And if the only if the only reason that Jesus matters is that he was a sacrifice that God sent, then it doesn't really matter what he said in some ways. You know, it's just like, okay, the sacrifice went. If in fact, the real, you know, hallelujah of the Easter story is the resurrection and the promise that the crucifixion is not the last word of God, and that God knows us in our pain, but then God also knows us in our, you know, believes that there's always life, and that, you know, that there is like even that Sunday will come after Friday and life will overcome death and that love will overcome hate. I mean, these are the Easter messages that I was taught and that I believe are important. And that, you know, and that even when our body dies, we are still overcome in love. And the resurrection matters, and so it is very important to me to be putting forth this idea, especially right now, you know, I think that there is, you know, we're in a real wrestling for the role of Christianity in the world, and putting forth this idea that there is like a absolute unqualified love for every individual who lives, that they're all loved by God, and that all of us matter, and that, you know, it's really important that that we recognize that in a time when people are trying to create a hierarchy of who's important and who counts in this country and around the world.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, your son distilled your story down really well about Jesus coming for love and not power, and that is something that comes throughout. I wanted to read just a little section of it, one page. And this is the scene. Jesus has been arrested, but it's before the cross. The picture is there's a Roman soldier who's whipping Jesus, who's tied to a post. And then what you have there as the words for this page, or these two pages, is, "The next day, Jesus was brought in front of the powerful leaders who accused him of trying to take their power away and building a world on the foundation of love. They accused Jesus of being a new kind of ruler. He was a different kind of leader. One who did not seek to take, but to serve. Who did not come to control, but to set free. Who did not come to sit on a throne, but to walk with the people in love." I mean, that's the heart of your story there, is this love and power contrast that it was so radical then and is still radical now.
I know. And aren't you, doesn't that make you really love Jesus? I mean, I really like, you know, not to be all evangelical and all, but, you know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, it's very beautiful. And this idea of someone, you know, we see this in the great leaders, like these great leaders who we, you know, who are not Jesus, but we see that in King. We see that in other like, you know, incredible leaders in this country and around the world who have really tried to reestablish what it means to create a society that is based on, you know, equality and love and dignity, and how threatening that can be. And so I just think, I think what I'm trying to do there, as you can see, is like, really articulate the beloved community that King articulated, which was like a continuation of, you know, the kingdom of God that my great grandfather and many others in the social gospel talked about, and so it's a through line of this idea of like, what, you know, on earth as it is in heaven, it matters what we do on this earth, and it matters what kind of society where our religion is espousing on earth. And so this book also has that that goal, that I want people, like, even I don't, like, again, I don't, you know, I just, I'm not, this is not to get everybody to be a Christian, but I do think for those of us who do follow Jesus, it's good to understand why we're doing it, and then for people who don't follow Jesus to maybe say, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, like, hard for me to understand when the loudest voices are just wielding, you know, Christianity like a, you know, like a club, meaning a like a bludgeon, and so I think that's another hope for me, is that people see articulated this beautiful person, and we'll understand that better, both people within the faith and then outside of the faith.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation, but first I want to remind you that you should subscribe to Warden Way's award-winning e-newsletter, A Public Witness. It will help you make sense of the world of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wardenway.org. And now, back to our conversation. Yeah, and so kind of moving beyond on your book, because, you know, you're not, I don't think you're starting a new career here necessarily as a children's author. And so you're still in your day job as president and CEO of the Interfaith Alliance. This book is coming out, of course, It's been out for a few months, but we're talking about it during Lent, which I was really excited to be able to have you on to talk about it as people are thinking about Easter coming up. But it's also this is the first Lent that it's out, and we're in an election year, and democracy is on the line, and Christian nationalism, all of this stuff about seeking power over love. And this is something I know you're spending your time thinking about, working on, publicly addressing in this moment. So, you know, what are you seeing that you're concerned about? And this is, I think, a great chance then for those that maybe aren't familiar with the Interfaith Alliance and missed your earlier episode on this program to tell us a little bit about what you all are doing, especially in the year 2024 that is so critical.
Yeah, thank you. You know, and I really appreciate, you know, your partnership in this and your friendship and helping in this conversation. It's a this is a critical time, and you know, again, this book was, you know, I kind of think of it as like, you know, it's definitely a side gig. I'm not like, you know, it happened to be coming out while I'm in this role, but now that it is out, I see, oh, okay, well, this is kind of what I mean when I talk about when I'm very concerned about the way Christianity in today among a small minority. It's not a teeny minority, but it is a minority of Christians and a minority of Americans, but they are using Christianity, and they are using this idea that we were founded as a Christian nation, which they conveniently make in their own image, you know, and they say, and that means that some people here count more than others, and some of us get to decide what is okay for others, when exactly the opposite is what is true in this country, that we were founded specifically to avoid such an idea, because everyone, you know, all these found, all of them came from states that had established religion, and many of them had difficulties with that. And so they decide, we're not going to establish a religion, and we're going to let everyone thrive equally. And so now you have people, and throughout history, we've had people say, this is a Christian nation. And by that, they mean white, and they mean Protestant, and they mean a certain kind of theology that matters. That's what matters. And if you don't bow down essentially to our idol of our Christian nation ideal of whiteness, of a certain kind of theology, then you're out of the fold. Not only are you out of the fold of Christianity. So like for me, I don't count in the Christian nation that they're talking about.
An ordained Baptist minister, but you're not going to get to run the government.
Yeah, and neither of us, you know, and not that I don't want to be a part of their club. I want to be a part of the club that is actually what represents the American possibility, which is a multiracial, multireligious, nation in which everyone is able to count and have dignity equally. And so what we are seeing right now is like it's a power grab is what it is. And they often use religion and this idea of freedom of religion to excuse bad behavior, to use religion as a reason to discriminate rather than celebrate, to subjugate rather than liberate. And so, we're in a moment now, you know, we're in election, but it's been happening for years, unfortunately. Interfaith Alliance was founded in the 90s explicitly as an answer to the Christian Coalition and Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, Ralph Reed, who were just saying, we're the mantle of religion for America. And if you don't listen to us, you're against freedom of religion. And so I want to offer these two questions whenever anybody uses freedom of religion as an excuse to legitimize their behavior. Whose religion and whose freedom? Ask those questions. So we are working very hard. I was just on a panel around censorship. Censorship is something, freedom to read is very closely tied to actual freedom of religion. If you start deciding who can read what, you're actually curtailing the ability of freedom of expression, freedom of exploration, and freedom of religion. It's also true that the most censored books after people of color, specifically Black and LGBT, are Muslim and Jewish books. books that center Muslim and Jewish characters. So we're doing a lot on censorship. We're working with the American Library Association, helping them to begin to develop a religion strategy, because they're getting attacked by people who are using religion as a rationale. And all of us who don't agree with that need to show up for our librarians who are being literally traumatized, being accused of being groomers, being terrible things, and all done in the, you know, because you're protective of my children and protective of my religion and my faith. It's terrible what's being happened. So we're doing a lot with censorship. We're doing a lot with freedom to vote. We're doing a lot on LGBT issues. It's crazy what's happening out there. Hundreds of bills trying to roll back equality, attacking trans people. And I just, you know, I just want to spend a moment on that. Like, I think for some people of faith, trans issues are hard to understand. What I do know is that trans people are people and they deserve every bit of respect. And the parents of trans kids, believe me, no parent expects to be the parent of a trans kid. And yet they are, and they love their kids. And they're trying to care for their kids. And it's this incredible overreach that some are saying, no, you can't, because my religion is going to tell you what to do with your children. It's wild. And so anyway, I'll stop there, but you know, you're getting the vibe. Sorry. I went on a little bit of a rant. You'll have to excuse me, Brian. I'm impassioned.
Well, you know, the preacher part still comes out. I'm sure some of your former parishioners are like, I didn't know he could do the Easter story in 1,000 words or less, right? I mean, so I mean, but the heart of your book is so relevant to exactly what we've just been talking about. This quest for power and the way that you're telling the story is the exact opposite of what Jesus was about. And yet so many Christians are still seeking power.
Yeah, they're seeking power. They're seeking to control. They're seeking to decide what's acceptable, like what, and they're, you know, all of it. And yet the idea behind Together We Rise is actually Jesus invites us to community. Jesus invites us to see one another and as sharing our heart, because we share God's heart. And so, you know, after the resurrection, all of a sudden, like, they see Jesus, you know, it's all like, you know, kind of biblical, you know, when you look at the story, like, you know, the women who were with Jesus when he died go to the tomb, and they're looking to care for Jesus in the tomb. And then they talk to a gardener who turns out to be Jesus. And then they're all so ecstatic. And it's all about like you know, recognizing love in one another and coming. And then we say, like, you know, the final thing is together we rise. Together we rise, you know, to find dignity in one another. And that's what I want Christians to stand up for right now. I mean, I think it's so important that we don't let Christian nationalists speak for Christians. You know, it's a terrible, like, honestly, young people don't have a lot of tolerance for this kind of stuff. And if you think young people, you know, are going to want to be Christians when they're just like attacking people right and left and denigrating people, why would you want to be a Christian? But there's so many good Christians doing amazing work out there, helping, you know, helping, migrants, helping immigrants, helping LGBT youth. We're, you know, there's just so many good things that are happening. It's just that we're not often the loudest, unfortunately.
Yeah, and one other thing I wanted to ask you about is, I mean, you're probably best known for your interfaith work, not just the Interfaith Alliance, but for years with other ministries and organizations. And you are a Baptist minister, and you've written a book that is very, you know, Jesus-centered. And you said you weren't necessarily trying to convert other people, but you want Christians to take our story seriously. And so I wanted to ask you about that, because I think it's a great reminder that you don't have to abandon your faith to join interfaith work. Here you are literally writing a Christian children book to teach good Christian theology. And you're in interfaith work, not despite your Christian faith, but because of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like, it's such an important point. And I think it's one that deserves to be continuously underlined, is that no one is asking anyone to give up their faith. to do work alongside people who are have different beliefs and different tradition. Interfaith Alliance, we work with people of all kinds of different backgrounds, and which includes people who have beliefs that don't include a religious tradition, but who believe in a pluralistic America, and who want to stand side by side with people who are from diverse backgrounds and perspectives. So it's just important to recognize that, I've been doing interfaith work a long time, both in, college settings, in nonprofit work, in journalism, and no one really ever expects anyone to get rid of their faith. Actually, it's kind of the opposite that will happen, is that the more you have to articulate your faith, the more actually you come in touch with your faith. Because if you have to explain yourself to someone and say, this is what I believe in an interfaith setting, it actually invites you to actually have to say it. So this exercise of this book, Together We Rise, was actually in some ways like really, it was tied into my interfaith and my broad work, which was like, what do I really believe? And so how does that intersect with the way I understand other people? And how do I understand my love for other people incorporated into my broader Christian, understanding and American understanding? The other thing, though, that you may encounter in interfaith work is that you come to admire some things about other traditions that you didn't know before. And you say, oh, so, there have been, some people have called this holy envy, where you're like, oh, I love that. That's so interesting. And I've had the chance to, to read so many, especially when I was at HuffPost Religion, read so many great pieces by Muslims, Hindus, Sikh Americans, Jewish, so many folks. And I was like, wow, I am growing. And it doesn't attack my faith. It just puts it in context alongside. And it's so important to me when Jesus says, love one another. To me, it's just so important that means everybody. And so I am not I'm not just loving people who are exactly like me in race, religion, even political ideology. Trying to find ways to love one another is just so important. So the last thing I'll say is it is really important right now for the interfaith community to recognize that we have to stand up for one another. And we're in a very tough moment with everything going on in the Middle East, and people are very, very, in a defensive mode, in a fear mode. The attacks on Jewish people, the attacks on Muslim people have skyrocketed. And I pray for is that we continue to try to show up for one another as best as we can, loving one another, even as we might fiercely disagree on some things, but recognizing that we're in a very fragile moment, and that love is so important right now, and compassion, empathy, the best of the interfaith movement will lead us to showing up even when it's very hard, and I do hope we can do that.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of work to do, but the Interfaith Alliance and you, Paul, are doing a lot of really important work, and it's so critical in this time. I'm thankful for all you're doing. Thankful for the fact that you joined us here on the program to talk about your book. If people are parents, grandparents of young kids, if my son was a few years younger, I would have particularly have appreciated this book. But if you have young kids, young grandkids, Together We Rise, an Easter story for all of us. Paul, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Brian.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.